extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. That is, of course, all of you. Listening at home, on the road, in the kitchen while doing dishes, whatever it is in your life, the free time that you fill with Extra Time, we thank you, we appreciate you. Big show coming up today. Portland Timbers fans and MLS fans alike, Evander, one of the best number 10s in the league, maybe the best if you're Phil Neville, joins the show to talk about his upbringing in Brazil, his move to Denmark, then MLS, the best goal he's scored for these Timbers teams, and why the Brazilian national team still holds such a strong pull in his heart. Also joining us today from MLS Season Pass, Paul Dolan. He's on that big Vancouver Red Bulls game this weekend, has a lot of insight on Vancouver and all the other teams he's seen so far in the Western Conference this year. Lori Lindsay joins us as well. Number one in your hearts in MLS and NWSL. Lori has some big time takes on the Philadelphia Union, their model and their contender status, plus more on some Eastern Conference teams we've been keeping our eye on this year. Quick news for you before we get to the best thing I saw, which is, of course, Wilfred Nancy's Columbus Crew handing it to Monterrey at home in CONCACAF Champions Cup. Season pass this weekend. The free game is Columbus-Montreal, which is an awesome storyline. Nancy versus Laurent Courtois, his former sort of understudy in Columbus, should be a game for those of you who have an aesthetic eye for soccer. Plus, Lionel Messi and Inter Miami visit New England, over 60,000 expected at Gillette Stadium. So tune in for that one, as well as countdown at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, wrap up at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time or on demand Sunday morning, and the early game, 1:45, Austin hosting the LA Galaxy. All right, deep breath, big pause, celebration time, light the candles, but blow them out because the job's not done. Columbus Crew, a 2-1 win against Rayados. Really a wonderful night just to watch soccer, to see ideas executed by both teams at a really high level on the field. But man, it is intoxicating to watch the way Nancy and this team plays, to watch the relationship that Cucho Hernandez has with movement into space with and out without the ball. And even late on in that game, defending. Wilfred Nancy was jacked up. It seems like all those issues between the two of them are in the rearview mirror. So I'm not going to celebrate too much. I'm just going to be happy that an MLS team is giving us these moments, this beautiful soccer, this potential to go to another CONCA Champions final. And we'll hold off on the celebrations until the Crew can get the job done, or should I just knock on wood? Apologies to everyone in Ohio. All right, let's get to the interviews. I think you're really going to enjoy this Evander chat. He was very open, very honest. Give me your thoughts. Enjoy, folks. All right, it's an absolute pleasure to have this man on the show. One of the best number 10s in Major League Soccer, consistently making the incredible look ever so casual. It's Evander of the Portland Timbers. Evander, good morning. I know it's early for you out on the West Coast. Thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Let's start with your name, Evander, because I was doing some research. You were born in 1998. The famous fight, Evander Holyfield against Mike Tyson, was in 1997. Who in your family is a big boxing fan, man?
No one is like a really big fan of boxing, but my dad at the time, he just wanna like warrior name, and the time just before I was born, there was the fight against Mike Tyson, and he said if Evander wins the fight, it's gonna be the name of my son. So he wants the fight, and that's how is my name.
So in a different world, your name is Mike. You're Michael. You know, that's it, right?
I don't know.
Fate is funny that way. So let's talk a little bit about your dad and your upbringing and the role soccer played in your life. Because I think in the United States, we don't have that same sort of culture where the game is played in the streets and it's sort of in the souls of everyone. Like there's not, there, it's just part of the, it's part of everyday life. What was it like for you in Rio de Janeiro growing up? What was the place soccer occupied in your days?
Soccer for me is my life, you know. Growing up playing soccer, playing the streets, as you said, playing everywhere, even inside of my house, you know, like dribbling the furniture. So, you know, I think also because my dad was a soccer player, so that's, you know, just becomes like a, you know, from family, you know. So you growing up like watching soccer, living the life, and in Brazil in general, soccer for us is the biggest sport. Is, you know, is passion, is everything.
Are you how do you compare to your dad as a player? Like, what kind of player was he?
I didn't watch him play. So when I was born, he was already retired. But people say he was a great player. Of course, it was not the best career he had, but he was a great player, people say.
Who did you look up to, other than your dad, of course, in those days? Like, which players were the ones that you were watching, loving as a kid, modeling your game after?
You know, as my dad retired, he was like looking something to do, and he decided to become an agent. So I grew up like around players. Wagner Love is one of the biggest player I grew up with, and you know, he's kind of part of my family. He's like my old brother, and so when he grew up, like, you know, next to the type of player with big career, and, you know, make you love soccer even more. And of course, looking the biggest players in the world, Ronaldinho and Kaká, later Neymar. So, you know, we just grew up watching them, and of course, we become very big fan.
I gotta ask you, you gotta rank those three for me. You just mentioned Ronaldinho, Kaká, Neymar. Who's number one? Who's number two? And who's number three? But, you know, could be number one in a different list.
This hard because there's different topics, you know.
Just in your heart, Evander. Just, you know, your personal affection, man.
I know. Because it's hard because Kaká and Ronaldinho, they won World Cup. They've been, you know, they won Ballon d'Or as well. Neymar, unfortunately, hasn't won a World Cup yet. Hasn't been the player of the world, but, you know, he's there, you know, even though he doesn't get the, you know, the title. But so it's hard. I don't know.
Who's number one? Who's number one? It sounds like you're between Dinho and Kaká.
I'll put Ronaldinho as first one.
Why is that?
Yeah, I don't know. Just, you know, big fan of Ronaldinho since I was a kid. You know, the things he does with the ball and all the magic and everything, he makes look easy. And we know it's not that easy to do the thing he does on a pitch. So that's why.
You make things look incredibly easy to me as well. I called it this weekend casually spectacular, Evander, because it sort of looks like the tempo, the rhythm you're playing at is like a step or two slower than everyone else, but you're a step or two ahead of them, technically, in execution, in ideas. Have you always felt like, hey, just it's I'm unhurried on the soccer field. I cannot be bothered, but I'm going to do special things.
Actually, when we do things like that, we don't actually think. But in soccer, it's a game that you got to be one step ahead, like even two sometimes, to, you know, do something special or, you know, create a play from out of nothing. You always got to be look around, so check who's the person closer to you, who is in better position. So you gotta think to play soccer. So I think soccer has become like automatic, if I can say that. So every player doing the same stuff, I just trying to do like different stuff than the rest of the players.
Dude, you're doing things that are automatic that other people aren't doing. Let's start with the shots from distance. Where I heard from Paul Dolan, he had a chat with you a few weeks ago, I think, before one of your games, that you credit futsal for your ability to shoot from distance. Explain that to me.
Yeah, so that was one of the things that, you know, I tried to explain, but I grew up like shooting pretty well. I just the power that I've been improving a lot, and of course the technique. But when I was like, I don't know, 10, 11 years old, I used to shoot the ball from, like, in futsal in Brazil, when you're 9, 10 years old, you play like with a small ball than people from, 14, 15 years old. So the ball is kind of different. The ball is lighter. And people from 14, 15, the ball is like a little bigger and heavier. So I used to train with the ball from people from 14, 15 years old. So I was like already like from with 10, 11 years old, I had the same power as the people from 14, 15 years old. So too much training. And yeah, I used to train a lot with my dad as well. So going every time that I had free time. So going to the court with my dad and training, dribbling, shooting, a lot of shooting. So that's why.
Get that weighted ball, folks. If you want to hit a ball with venom, get that weighted futsal ball, just bang it against the wall. Get on the Evander method. You debuted at 17 for Vasco. What was that day like? Walk me through what that felt like to you to have your first professional game as a teenager.
It was amazing. It was a dream that came through. When you're a kid, especially in Brazil, I was dreaming, you know, about your debut in the team that we are playing for. When I had a chance to make my debut at 17 years old, it was amazing. Of course, too young, and I was like you never imagine you're gonna like be, you know, playing for a professional with 17 years old. So it was a nice day.
Now, you made a big transition as a young man too, from Rio to Denmark. That had to have been sort of a whoa, where am I right now situation for you, or was it easy?
It was not easy, but it was in a moment that I was needing a fresh air. So after some moments in Vasco, I needed to like step up, and going to Denmark was a challenge. You know, when you're from Rio, Brazil, you know, we have the culture is different, the weather is different, and you have to leave your friends, your family. So to move to Denmark in a small city, but it was a challenge, and I was focused on the things that I wanted. So I wanted to improve. I wanted to be better. And when you go with this mindset, I think.
It's from Denmark to MLS, but I'm curious, compare MLS and the Danish league. How are they the same? How are they different? What's the level like between the two?
I think the intensity, and of course, in Denmark, you play more, you know, games. You have more competition to be playing. But you know, the intensity in Denmark is really high. They run a lot, and the ball, the way they play soccer is totally different. It's a lot of like long balls and fighting for the second balls. So, and the defense, they press a lot. They like to press. And so physically it demands a lot from the player. So I think that's, here in MLS, you have like a little bit more of space, so you got time on the ball, and of course play with more quality. So I think that's the difference.
So you made a big impact in two different regional competitions, Europa League, and then you were the assist leader 1 year, and then Copa Libertadores. I saw you had two goals in one game.
Yeah,
which is better, Europa or Copa?
Two different competition, but. No, Libertadores is for clubs in Brazil. It means like it's like Champions League. It's our Champions League in South America. So, I scored two goals in that competition for a period of time, being the younger player to score for the club that I was playing, was Vasco. So, and then Europa League, we know how amazing was to play the competition for the club I was playing for Michelin. So it was our chance to, show the world the our array of playing soccer, and being the top assist was great to be my name in there. Just it means a lot for me. It means that I'm a little making history.
maybe CONCACAF champion soon for you guys. Of course, Leagues Cup. I remember your banger in there. And Phil Neville's giving you a lot of flowers, a lot of compliments these days, Evander. He says he thinks he doesn't see a better player in either conference. Do you feel like you're at your best right now, or is there a different level?
I'm closest to my best. You know, of course, when he says I'm the best center in the league, we're not talking about Messi, because we can compare anyone to the GOAT. So, but yeah, I think the rest of the players, I'm there. I can do everything and much more than what they do. So, I'm just living a bit in a good moment. I'm trying to put the team in the best position as well. I know the team has been like not winning, so it also counts for me as a personal. So I'm just trying to take the team to the win and, you know, keep doing my best.
What's the best goal you've scored for the Timbers so far? What's your favorite?
The one against New York was nice. Last minute, and a stage on that means a lot for the American people, and also, you know, a beautiful shot. There is my second goal against Vancouver last year was beautiful as well because of the turn and touches and shot. And I think the free kick against Tigres was a good one too.
I was gonna have to bring that up, man. That was one of those moments where if you're watching the game, you know where you are. You just sort of drop everything and run around like a chicken with your head cut off. Speak about running around and where you like to be on the field. Are you a true number 10 in your eyes, like high up the pitch, central attacking? That's where you want to be. Or sometimes it feels like you operate from a little deeper, like a little Zico-esque, like coming up the field. Where do you like to position yourself? What's your favorite spot?
that's an interesting thing, because I grew up playing as a number 10. I always been a number 10, and as I went to Denmark, they didn't have a number 10, so they didn't play with the position number 10. So my first year in there, they played in a formation 3-4-3, so two men in the midfield, and I had to adapt to be one of them men. And then later they changed to a 4-3-3. So I was basically number 8. So for 4.5 years, I've been playing as a like number 8, basically. And now I'm having to adapt again to play as a number 10. So yeah, I like to position myself in that kind of area. So more to the left side of the pitch. As I respect the formation that Phil's put us to play, but he gives me all the freedom to move around off the pitch. So that's why I'm sometimes a little deeper, sometimes I'm a little higher, and it depends off the game. He just changed my position during the game against LA at home. I had to play as a number 10. Then we lost a man. I had to play as a false 9 in there. Then I had to drop as a number 8. Then I went back to number 9. So I think the good part is that, you know, I know well the position that I play. So it won't be a problem for me and for the team that I play for.
What's Phil like as a manager?
He's amazing. He's the guy that with a lot of attitude and personality. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he has a beautiful career as well. So he brings a lot of the experience that he had to us, and it make us, you know, now change our mindset, you know, the way we played against LAFC and Columbus, you know, like you had to run, you had to fight, you know, we need to have this winning mentality. And now we start, you know, understanding what he's bringing to us. So yeah, he's a very great coach.
When you look across the line against LAFC this weekend, Denny Bawanga is going to be staring back at you. Player to player, what do you respect about Denny and his game?
He's the guy that you cannot leave him alone, that if he has just a small chance, he's going to score. So he's been in this league for a period of time, so he knows well this league. He knows the right spot. And he has, you know, he's the guy that won't stop to finish until he score. I've watched him. I've watched some games from LAFC, and he's the guy that if he has the opportunity to pass and shoot, he's going to shoot. So he goes for the goal. And yeah, he's the guy that I respect a lot. He's a great player and, you know, a lot of personality as well. And, you know, was the top scorer last year. So you got to respect that.
Before I let you go, Evander, I want to ask you about the offseason. And I know you've said, look, I'm full in with the Timbers. That's what it's all about. But Flamengo was reportedly interested. And I thought the most interesting thing about that when you had your press conference was you mentioned the national team and the possibility to get in the national team. And I just wonder what it would mean to you in your career to have that opportunity, however it may come, to be a part of the Brazilian national team.
Yeah, no, I had the feeling of being national team when I was younger. So under 17, under 15, I played for the national team. And I know how is this feeling. So when I had the opportunity to go back to Brazil and play for Flamengo, one of the biggest club in Brazil today, I wanted to go because, you know, all eyes are in there. People are always looking for Flamengo, and Brazil is one of the biggest country playing in a big league. Also play again Libertadores and big competitions. So, and also the opportunity to be on a national team, as I said, because Brazil has been like in a new era right now, because they've been changing players and they've been looking for new players to put in a national team. So it was the mindset to go there to Flamengo, play well, and, you know, be on the spots again to be selected for the national team. I know how it works in Brazil. I know that barely a player who plays in MLS or other leagues to Brazil is, you know, it's kind of different. If you have a player playing in Europe and then player playing in MLS, in both they're doing the same thing. Of course, they're gonna look up for the player in Europe. So it was just a change to, you know, move and, you know, being a sport again, have people looking for me, because in Brazil and they barely look to MLS, to the US. I know this kind of hard, but we gotta move on. I gotta keep doing my job here and do something to be on the spot again.
So we're thankful to be able to watch you every week, but we wish the best for you, obviously, in your career and in your life. Your life is in Portland now, and I'm always curious. You got a friend, a family member coming from Rio. They've never been to Portland. You've got to host them for a weekend, Evander. Where are you taking them? What are you doing in Portland with this person?
Of course, take them for the game. I think the stadium is just such a nice atmosphere. You know, take them to, I don't know, downtown is good. You know, walk around there, get some good restaurant.
What's the restaurant? What's the spot?
I don't know. The best spot there, I think, is Jenkin. Maybe. Okay. It's a Japanese restaurant, so it's a good one. Yeah, I think it's the best one we have here. I don't know. The go around of the city. Even me, I need to know more about the city. I better get out of home. So
very focused on the game, man. Yeah. Focused on the game, right?
Yeah.
Playing so well. We've enjoyed watching you this year and since you arrived in MLS. Evander, thank you so much for taking the time, man. It's great to get to know you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Very happy to add a partner in soccer to the roster list right now. Paul Dolan up in Vancouver doing his things for many years with the Vancouver 86ers and others for the Canadian national team and now the Dulcet Tones on MLS season pass. Paul, what's up, man? Goalkeeper Union, my oldest son, I guess, now, who's obsessed with it, and you.
Yeah, well, and I'm looking forward to being in your backyard in the next day or two when we have the Red Bull game against the Whitecaps there. I'm really looking forward to, you know, seeing two of the best teams in the league go head-to-head. Two teams that I think a lot of people probably didn't expect to be where they are right now.
7:30 p.m. Eastern, of course, you can watch it. MLS season pass. We'll have the full hour pregame on MLS Countdown leading in. You know a thing or two about these Whitecaps, Paul, so let's start there. Vanni Sartini, There is not a more fascinating man in this league than Vanny, in my opinion. He's an open book. Sometimes that book leads you to places you never thought possible, whether it's his reactions on the field or reactions in the press. Tell me about Vanny's place in Vancouver sports, about his place in the club. Like, where does he stand in Whitecaps history as far as head coaches go?
Well, Weeby, I'm going to have you get to the actual numbers because I know you love to break down that stuff. But I'll look at it in a little bit of a different way. I think he has been the most successful coach of the Whitecaps in the MLS era since 2011 when they came in. And, you know, it's not a huge list, and there hasn't been a lot of success in terms of playoff success, never getting past the first round. But Carl Robinson obviously had some good years. In fact, I was doing the game in Portland when if they had beaten the Timbers, I think it was 2015, they would have won the West that year. So that's kind of the peak of how good the Whitecaps as an MLS club have been. And maybe Carl Robinson at that point had done the most of any of the coaches. And you could even say after that as well. But at this point now, Vanni Sartini has taken a team that doesn't have a lot of superstar power and molded them into a real contender in the West. And I think a lot of it has to do, obviously, with what he brings in terms of his passion and his energy. But I think sometimes it goes underlooked at how much he brings in tactically as well and gets a team all on the same page, fighting for each other to be able to get the results that they're getting against maybe teams that have a bit more star power.
You mentioned the contender status, and there's always this early season, are they, aren't they not debate, especially with teams that don't have the bona fides from recent past. And Vancouver, unfortunately, does not have those bona fides, particularly in terms of playoff success and finishing high in the Western Conference. Do you think this is a true contender this year in Vancouver?
There's a caveat. I think they do need another piece in the summer. I think because they're a team that relies on every player working for each other and a team that knows their drills inside and out, Vanny sometimes calls it scripted, the way that they play. But to know where your colleague is running, to know where a teammate is off the ball, to know that when a ball is played wide, it's going to go long or central, I think a lot can be said for how much and how important that is within a team to feel comfortable and be a contender. And they have valuable players as well. You know, if you're talking about Ryan Gauld and Brian White and Andres Kubas, and the goalkeeping's been good this year. Defensively, they have an excellent structure. I think you can put them as a contender because nobody in the West looks to be absolutely running away with it. And as you know, on any given day, you can win, first of all, a series if you need to start it all, but then one-off games as you come to the final. Yes, for me, they're a contender right now. I said that at the beginning of the year. I don't think many people thought that they really would be, but because of that structure and the way they're working for each other, I think they are.
What's the missing piece? What's the piece in the summer that this team needs to add to take the next step?
I think in their wingback positions, they have some strengths, but Alessandro Schopf isn't a natural wingback, although he has come to the forefront as a player that Vanni Sartini's gotten the best out of. And that's another thing that he does so well is he caps the players that he has to get the most out of their potential. So I think one of the wingback positions needs to be strengthened. You could say that maybe as a striker as well, you know, Cordova last year was their designated player who they haven't replaced yet. And as Axel Schuster says, the sporting director, he wants to get it right before he gets it first. So I think there might be a piece that comes in the summer.
All right, you said Brian Wyatt, we've got Gauld rolling about. I think Fafa Picot has been absolutely crucial this year, sort of pushing that forward line higher, providing an outlet wide as a true winger. But who's the most valuable player on this team? Like, can you put that tag on somebody? I didn't even mention Andres Kubas.
Yeah, well, let's have Vanny answer that question because he says the team can win without Ryan Gauld, but that they really struggle when Brian White is not in the lineup. And obviously Ryan Gauld is, you've heard the expression, the working man's DP, their star player in terms of what he can provide with key passes, the energy he provides. But Brian White leads the line. He leads the defensive structure, the way he plays, the selfless running that he makes, the runs off the ball, and then his timely finishing last year anyway, and it's starting to come good again this year. He had some misses against the Galaxy, but he's on a roll right now. He and Ryan Gauld are really working well together. He's the piece that Vanni Sartini says that is irreplaceable in a team that doesn't have irreplaceable players. Because again, it is a very much team first concept of, I don't want to say next man up necessarily, but there is depth there that they can come in and because they know what their roles are, they can still execute and get results. But without Brian White, it makes it a whole lot more difficult.
It used to be, Paul, that we were always talking about Brian White and this sort of like all underrated team aspect of like, oh my God, but have you seen this young American striker that nobody talks about? Well, those days are over, but there is still a squad full of guys that I think fit that bill in Vancouver. Who is the guy that you would point out and say, hey, across the league, you're listening to Extra Time, you may not be familiar with fill in the blank, but he is a true baller.
I feel like Andres Kubas is still a little bit of an unknown, and you brought him up just now. He's the glue in the center of midfield. It's no coincidence that the game that he missed earlier this year against Real Salt Lake at home was the one that the Whitecaps lost at home. And that center of midfield, Chicho Arango, just took control of that. He dropped off from a more forward position into a number 10 role and really had the run of the roost in the middle of the park where there was no Andres Kubas all over him. He drapes over players almost to a fault. You know, he will miss the Red Bull matchup because of five yellow cards. So sometimes it goes over a little bit, perhaps too much in terms of picking up yellow cards, and he needs to be a bit more careful in that area. But he's a developing player too, a young player. He's got a strike on him. He can switch the play, but he is known almost primarily as being that first breakup guy who destroys an attack and then gets your team going the other way.
I'm going to nominate Ali Ahmed. Love the Kubas shout. We can't yell about that dude enough. But man, Ali Ahmed seems like he's taken a big step forward this year. And the way that Vanni Sartini has the team set up puts him in great positions. So let's talk about how they set up against the Red Bulls. Red Bulls don't really want the ball, Paul, even at home, even though they can play with it this year. How do you think Vancouver responds to going to Red Bull Arena?
This is the Spider-Man meme, isn't it?
Because yeah, exactly.
I feel like the referee will drop the ball in the middle of the field and neither club will go towards it.
You get it. No. It's all yours. Yeah.
That's right. Well, let's look at New York Red Bulls. Last in possession, very comfortable to sit back and counter and use that transitional ability that they've got, especially with the players who are playing so well up front this year and Forsberg and obviously Morgan and Von Zier is having a good year as well. So they've got the ability to punish you in that transitional play that they've been known for over the years. They're not pressing quite as high as they have in recent years, or I should say they're picking their times a little bit more carefully, I guess. And that's what the Whitecaps are doing as well. So this is a fascinating tactical battle. This is the one question I'm most interested in hearing from the coaches when we speak to them ahead of the game is how will you set up? I feel it for the Whitecaps. The reason that they've won three games away from home in a row is because they're more comfortable allowing the opposition to come at them. And I feel that there might be that onus on New York to, because they're in front of their home crowd, to get them on board is to maybe take a few more chances and have more possession of the ball. And that'll be just fine for Vanny. I think at home, the Whitecaps have been almost a little bit too tentative and maybe respected LA Galaxy a little bit too much. And the only reason I say that is that defensively they were excellent. As much as LA had possession of the ball in the first half in that game, and it was up to 80%, 35 minutes into the game, but there were very few chances. So structurally it was good. But I think that you want to get the crowd in the game when you're at home. You want to get them on board. You want to show some energy. And I thought that the Whitecaps showed just a little bit too much respect in that game. I think for New York, they'll look to try to attack a bit more. So look for the Caps to bunker and try to get something on the break. But it's a great question because it's one I think we're all looking forward to watching. Even though it's two teams that don't necessarily love the build, they're quite good at that as well when they are in possession.
Some similarities from last weekend, of course, LAFC and the Red Bulls. One of those, as he said, the Spider-Man meme. He's like, oh, no, it's all you. You do the honors. The ball is yours. I don't need this. Let's talk quickly about the Red Bulls before we move on. I know you've seen a ton of teams around the league this year, including that Galaxy squad. But Bradley Wright Phillips on the wrap-up the other night, the prompt was, you have the number one pick in the League's Cup draft. Who are you picking to win it? And this man is insane. He has forgotten completely about the history of the Red Bulls as a club, and he picked the New York Red Bulls. I had to laugh just a little bit at them, even though they've been very good, and I think they have the potential. But let's hone in on that word, potential. Does this team have championship potential to you? Are they at that level after 10 match days?
I don't know that they're tier one, although obviously the standings would kind of show otherwise. They're right there. I feel that if we're talking about the Whitecaps and now the Red Bulls, in comparison, that both teams need that one more piece. And I think for the Red Bulls, it might be a striker. It might be in the center back position. I don't think they have a tier one defense. I think some of the guys have done a really good job there. The Nealis brothers have done a great job. Dylan Nealis has come in, I think, done a solid job. You saw what he did against Boango in the last game. Ayla, for me, a decent young prospect, you know, a U21 and out of Sweden. I like his height. I like what his potential might be, but I don't know that he is a number one bang on starter right now. Obviously, with Reyes out, that might change. But I find, too, that, you know, the way that the best teams play is that they do the basics right, and then they get their DPs to win you the game one way or another. And I like what New York has right now, but is Forsberg, is Von Zier, and Lewis Morgan as well, are they the players that are of that upper echelon that win you the championship, whether it's a League's Cup or an MLS play? So with respect to BWP, who knows the Red Bulls inside and out, I don't want to say that I don't think that they have the ability to do that, because I think they can get close, but I don't know that they have that finishing product to put them into the championship role.
Primary window just closed in MLS. Secondary window opens in the summer. Obviously, we are already thinking about it, talking about it, wondering what might happen in those months. The Galaxy were one of the big winners from the primary window, Paul. And yeah, it's fun to watch Gabriel Peck and Joe Pantil and Ricky Puig and Dan Jovovich hunting in the box and Mark Delgado making these sort of line-busting runs. But then there's the flip side for Galaxy fans. It's not so fun to watch them on set pieces. And I cannot imagine that the goalkeepers, the back line, anybody on that team, when there's a corner kick for the opposition or a free kick, are feeling particularly comfortable right now. The number is 7. It might be 8. Either way, it's way too many goals allowed from those situations for Greg Vanney. And you were a goalkeeper, played many years in between the pipes. If you were on the Galaxy right now, how do you fix this? What do you do? Like, is this a tactical issue? Is it a physical issue? Is it an emotional issue? Because they can't seem to deal with anything.
You know, I'll throw in it that I was also the Canadian national team goalkeeper coach, but my side role, which obviously was very prominent, was handling set plays as well. So I keep a really close eye on what teams are doing around the league, whether it's the height of their line. You know, Phil Neville plays the highest line I've seen in my life. And Vanni Sartini will play the lowest line, almost on top of his goalkeeper. And so when I saw what the Galaxy were conceding, particularly from corner kicks, particularly from the one side, the right side, as they look at it from their own goal, and spoke to Greg Vanney about it. And again, the coaches give us such good insight. He brought us something I hadn't even really thought of, even as a goalkeeper and a set play coach, was that he felt on a number of occasions where the Galaxy were in a good build and good possession, and then they got countered and had to give away the corner almost out of desperation, that there was a frustration within the mindset of the players that, we had a chance to go forward and we've given it up, and that there wasn't that high level of concentration that was needed just a few seconds later when the ball's coming in. Obviously, specifically and tactically, where they play a mix of zonal and man-to-man, them getting beat at the near post time and again for the flick-on that leaves the guy at the back post, truly, whether you're in a zone or man-to-man, in almost no man's land, it's hard to react to those. It's just a matter of where the ball's going to end up. And if you've got a guy from 1 yard out, it's just going to hit him and go in. You hope it's your guy, but for whatever reason, it hasn't been Galaxy defenders who've been aggressive to it. And that's the other thing he said, too, is that we've got to be much more aggressive and assertive to go and win the ball. But particularly, don't let the player at the near post get that flick on. So as a goalkeeper, you asked me about that as well. It's his role to make sure that, first of all, the marking's right, but also that the concentration is there. And that is a primary thing that he needs to do, because he wasn't involved in that build. He was back in his goal. Now they're setting up for a corner kick. This is his primary role, is to make sure that every player is in the position they're supposed to be, that they're fully concentrated and ready to win the ball.
Pressure moments for the Galaxy right now. They're putting everybody else under pressure, and certainly Austin will feel that at home on Saturday, 1:45 p.m. Eastern. Austin hosting the LA Galaxy. You can watch on MLS Season Pass. Toronto FC in action on the road in Orlando. Boy, it started hot up in Toronto, Paul. Then the ebbs came, and then we got a big dramatic win this last weekend. But it just feels to me like everything is sort of on a knife's edge. There is a very high likelihood in my mind that this Toronto team just doesn't have the talent to survive the whole season and gradually sort of falls off and off and off and ends up at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. That might be okay if they make progress tactically and they figure out the personnel that John Herdman's taking forward. This feels like a I don't know, it feels like they're in purgatory a little bit, right? From being terrible, but the expectations in the city are still that they're going to put out a great product, a great team. Like, where is Toronto FC as a club in this moment?
They are very over-reliant on terrific goalkeeping, which has won them points, and Lorenzo Insigne that has won them points. And even with Bernadeschi playing as well as he has been, still scoreless, it's just too top-heavy, that team. You're right about the fact that this squad can't win on a continuous basis until it's bolstered. You need a Richie Larea back, obviously. Some of the other injured players, that's really hurt them. But I still feel they need a lot more pieces. Respect to Prince Owusu for one of the goals of the year.
Oh, my gosh. But that was nuts.
It was nuts. But that center forward position needs bolstering as well. And I think that you've got a coach there that has buy-in, but he needs the tools as well. And part of John Herdman's success, of course, with the national team was what he did in terms of getting every player on the same page, that type of buy-in, excellent structure, motivational factor for sure. But he had Alphonso Davies, he had Tejan Buchanan, Jonathan David, Kyle Larin, the list goes on. And he doesn't have that at Toronto FC, albeit he does have two phenomenal talents in Insigne and Bernardeschi. But look, as soon as he goes down, Insigne, they're scrambling. And you cannot paper over those cracks with incredible goalkeeping every week. So they need to bolster in a lot of positions. I think a couple of players have been a little bit disappointing. I feel John Herdman can coach up any player. I saw it in the beginning of the year with Shane O'Neill. He was doing things I hadn't seen him do in years. With Davy Flores, who came in and really impressed me in the early going. And then it's kind of faltered since then. Obviously, it doesn't help that O'Neill got hurt. And the people are starting to find a way about Toronto that they can exploit. And they're going to have to win their home games, obviously, and try to stay in the hunt as long as they can. But they need to make a move in the summer transfer window.
Home games, wins in particular, a problem for Portland right now. The attack looks special, Paul. Looks really good. Evander looks like one of the best players in the entire league, but there's a reason why they haven't won in six. Three straight draws and losses before that. It's the back line. How does Phil Neville get something more out of that group? Like, it feels like that's the area. Like, forget the attack. That part's working for you right now. Like, figure out how to throw shutouts or one-goal games.
Yeah, and I was all keen on the Canadian triangle in the back there with Crépeau and behind Miller and McGraw. But, you know, that hasn't worked out all that well. At one point, they were undefeated with that trio in the back. Obviously, Crépeau getting sent off, McGraw being injured. That's broken that up a little bit, too. You know, what Phil Neville said to us ahead of the game that we did, the broadcast that we did, is that he needs his team doing the basics. He was really disappointed with how they played against Philadelphia prior to the game that we did. They dominated possession, but they didn't finish, and they made defensive basic errors. So you're right about the defensive side is where they really need to pick things up. But then he also said, if we do the basics right, then we need and we will rely on our DPs. And you spoke about Evander there. And you were going to ask, too, I think, about what makes Evander so special. And I would say, what can make him even more special? Because he's obviously got the talent, and we're seeing it flourish right now. But if he can keep that consistency and lift the rest of his team, you know, we spoke to Evander ahead of the game that we did, and we asked him, too, because, you know, one of the things he's got that nobody else has, I think, as a number 10 is the shooting ability. Now, there's other 10s, let's be honest. There's a guy in Miami, a number 10, who can shoot, but and a lot of them throughout this league. But Evander's got a special ability to strike. And we asked him, too, where did that come from? Because this was just after the New York City goal that he'd scored. And he said growing up in Brazil, he played a lot of futsal and that you have to release the ball really quickly. And the repetition of playing with a heavier ball at a younger age meant that when he's playing now with an MLS ball, he can absolutely tonk the thing. So those are the things I think that make him special. And if he can keep that consistency and not get down on himself, sometimes he'll, you know, have a bit of a pout here and there. And that, I think, means that the rest of his team or the other teammates around him are wondering, okay, is he on his game today or not? If he can keep that consistency, I think he can almost single-handedly keep this team in playoff contention.
I agree with you. And right now, Felipe Mora is the definition of consistent in front of goal. Four straight games with a goal for Mora. It does sound like Portland would like to add some pieces when you have Moreno and Mora and Evander. And soon to be, you would expect Jonathan Rodriguez in form. That can be potent. But again, I think it's 13 goals allowed in five games. Not good enough. Let's stay in the West before we see you out of here, Paul. Real Salt Lake. Would you vote for Chicho for MVP if the vote was today? Would he be your guy?
8-6, and in the fashion that he's doing it, yes, I think I would. Again, I'm a massive Lionel Messi fan. I think what he does for his team, there's no comparison that any other player does it for their team. But Chicho Arango is right there for me. And I mentioned the game that we did where he was playing in a more central midfield dropping off role. His range of passing was incredible on the day. And so when given the space, he just knows how to play the game. He knows where to be in certain situations. And he's a terrific finisher, obviously. And so right now, with the role that he's on, he's got to be right there 1-2 with Lionel Messi for me.
I'm with you in terms of his ability. I'm still going Lionel Messi just because the minutes played. But hey, that can change over the course of a season. But there's a Luis Suarez character in Miami, and there is no such thing in Salt Lake. All right, before I let you go, man, who do we want to see coach Canada?
So we'll finish with the easy one, huh?
Yeah, just a throw in, Paul. Just yeah, it's a nothing burger. What do you think?
Well, I've put my name in there. No, I haven't. You know, I love Mauro Biello, and I think he's done a pretty good job with what he's done recently. I wonder if Canada just needs going in ahead of not just Copa America, because I'm not sure exactly if there's time even to find someone ahead of that, but going into a home World Cup in 2026, I think you need to ratchet it up just a bit. And whether that's a Jesse Marsh, who I have incredible respect for. I remember sitting down with him ahead of a game and almost being blown away by his tactical answers and his setup and just the way that, you know, he managed his team. I was really impressed by that. Obviously, his pedigree now, too, is followed. But I think he would be of the people that I've heard names thrown out there, whether it was Thierry Henry or, you know, you heard Frank Lampard. I know that wasn't ever really a serious consideration. But unless there's someone else who's in the works, to me, the name that Christian Jack had mentioned that is in the works as an American coach, I think it might be Jesse Marsh. And I would be fine with that. I think he would be a good leader of the Canadian team.
Speaking of Jesse Marsh, at least his former clubs, New York Red Bulls hosting the Vancouver Whitecaps on Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. You can hear Paul on that broadcast. Paul, thank you for joining, man. Officially a partner in soccer.
Yes, anytime. Good to be on with you, Andrew.
All right, from the West Coast to the East Coast, we go. Big thanks to Paul Dolan. We welcome now our second, not honorary, permanent partner in soccer to the show. Lori Lindsay is here. What's up, Lori? How you doing?
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me. Always a joy to be chatting with you. So happy to be here.
Is there a North American professional soccer league that you are not a massive voice for?
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. Yes, I am busy, but I love it. And yeah, best job in the world, as they say. So
you're catching Lori on MLS Season Pass. You're also catching her on Amazon, talking to NWSL, doing that thing, splitting the leagues. That's where your expertise lies in the game, no matter where it's played, but also in Philadelphia, because that's where you live, and that's where you'll be this week in the Union hosting Real Salt Lake, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, MLS Season Pass. Great game. Great matchup, and maybe not to the level that we might have thought when the season started, but now these are two quote-unquote elite teams. What's your biggest storyline from this game?
Yeah, actually, I'm really excited to see this. One, I think because Philadelphia has had a week off, right? So what do they look like in terms of their freshness? But then also, I think, and this is something that we've heard from the RSL organization, that this is a huge test for them, right? Difference we know in time terms of styles of play from Eastern Conference to Western Conference. So them coming over amongst Philadelphia and testing themselves against the only undefeated team left in Major League Soccer. So yeah, I think there's going to be some chaos. I think it could be a wild ride for all of us. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. Julian Carranza, Chicho Arango, two top tier number nines, but I want to go into pure aesthetics. It doesn't have to be production. You don't have to base it on the stat sheet. Sometimes I like to go a little bit too deep and to all the advanced analytics on this Philadelphia Union team. The aesthetics of their game, whether it's the beauty of the way they pass or play or score, or the beauty in the way they tackle or frustrate other players. Who do you like?
Okay. Well, I'm going with beauty of looks first, and that is Carranza.
He's handsome,
and this, yeah, exactly. And this makes me laugh because Witty or Chris Whittingham, for the listeners, we call a lot of games together and we always have a good laugh about how beautiful of a man this guy is, especially with the flowy locks. And then at times, sometimes there's a bit of gel in there that, you know, slicking that look
I think
back.
I'm guessing he's more of a clay guy. I don't know. It feels like it has a natural hold. Maybe like a matte paste. I've thought too hard about this.
Yeah. Yes. No, we've gone down the deep rabbit hole of it as well. So, but yes, in terms of looks, but then also aesthetics, Carranza would be top up there for me. I just love the way he plays. Smooth on the ball, can drop in deep, can obviously get in behind defenses as well and score goals. So love him. And then huge favorite this year is also Quinn Sullivan, what he's brought to the team. And I know we might get in a little bit more to Philadelphia in general later on. But yeah, I think he's just been an incredible piece that gives them a different look in the attack. And when you have a team that's kept quite a bit of the continuity of personnel together, I think he's been exceptional for them to start this season.
You read my mind on talking more about Philly, but I think it's a perfect transition from Quinn Sullivan, because many teams around the league, when they need another difference maker, when they're looking at the wing or somebody, they say, okay, he can play wide, or we can bring him up maybe as a second forward. Hell, he could even play the 10 if we were in a pinch. They'd go sign from overseas. They would put together a multi-million dollar bid and have to go do that. But that is not the Philly way. And I love the Philly way. And I'm a huge fan of Jim Curtin and this team and everything that they've accomplished. They've been consistently good, maybe even great, but they haven't been trophy winning other than the 2020 Shield. Do they need to tweak their model at all? Do they need to change anything as a club if they want to get over that hump? Or is the way they do it now good enough?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said. I love the way that they do things here. And I don't actually think that they need to tweak their model at all. I enjoy them building through their academy, bringing those young players in. I think those were questions that we had in general about the specific group coming into this year. Did they wait too long to sell players, Carranza being one of them, to get the money maybe that they feel like he's worth? But I think what we're seeing now is a good introduction in Quinn Sullivan's an excellent example of this, is that you bring some of these players through and at the right moment, they click for you. So we all know that Bedoya started, played majority of the minutes last year. Well, they transitioned him to more of somebody coming off the bench. Yes, he did start last game against Atlanta United. However, I think you're starting to see somebody like Quinn Sullivan add a different look. So even if you do keep a team together, even if you have that same model, and there are questions at the beginning of the season, is it going to be stale? It proves that if they hit at the right time, these young players can really produce and give you a different look, and you can get the results when needed. Now, they're going to have to continue to freshen up the squad as time goes on. But that same model of bringing players through from the academy and rejuvenating the squad, I think, proves and has shown that can be extremely successful in this league.
I completely agree with you. The one thing I would say, and it sort of looms in my mind because of the Carranza situation on his contract, is, man, you've got to keep up with the arms race at some point, in particular with your designated players. I know the U22s, in large part, maybe that's a mechanism for this team to re-sign Quinn Sullivan's or Jack McGlynn's or whoever that might be, but you got to have difference makers in this league if you want to win titles. So we'll see. Now, Chicho Arango is a difference maker. It's going to be a tough test for everybody on that Union back line and in the midfield to keep a hold on him, because as Paul explained to us earlier, he likes to move all over the place. He can play the, you know, I'm the man, number nine, let me ride the shoulder. He can also play the, where am I? Oh, I've popped up in the midfield and now I'm playing the left back through for an easy assist. How would you go back to your playing days? How would you defend a forward like Chicho? What would be in your mind before the game, and what would you be thinking about when you're on the field?
Yeah, well, I like the way that Paul described him, because this might be a big reach, but he kind of reminds me of Ronaldo 1.0, right? He's a bull, but also he is super technical, smooth, can ride challenges. So if I'm defending him on Philadelphia, I'm going to be really curious to see what they do. I think they could even utilize their three center back formation that we've seen, because then you always have some sort of pressure. You always have some sort of cover. I think the one thing that people don't realize with Arango is that when you're playing with two center backs, he's going to occupy both of those center backs. And then you have Gomez on the right-hand side, who's most likely going to be up against Wagner, right? Who's going to go forward. We know that he's a huge part of Philadelphia's attack. So then is he left isolated on his own? But if you play three center backs, Glesnes, Elliott, Lowe, you always have somebody that can pressure, whether it's out wide, you always have somebody that can pressure if Arango drops in to the midfield, and then you always have cover. Because otherwise, they're going to be chasing players in that attack for Real Salt Lake, especially how much that game can open up for Philadelphia. So that's what I would do if I was Philadelphia, or if I was defending. I would go with a three-back situation, make sure that I have coverage and can occupy him with two center backs at all time and one that can float free.
I mean, I'm sure a lot
of
coaches.
We'll see if that's what happens,
Hey, Lori, it sounds great to me, and it makes complete sense. And then I go back and look at the numbers and think like, okay, 15 goals scored for RSL, and Chicho has scored or assisted on 14 of them, and my mind is just blown. This dude's form is so good, it may not matter. Now, speaking of form, New York City didn't have it, and now they do. They went back home, and they were under pressure, and Nick Cushing was feeling it, as was the entire squad. And now they've rattled off a couple wins and they'll welcome Charlotte in on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Are you sensing a theme here? All these 7:30s, folks, you might want to double box, get your game up, get MLS 360 up as well to keep up. I'm just going to be real direct with you on New York City. Are they a playoff team at the end of 2024? Why or why not?
Okay. I'm going to be direct too, even though I want to give even more nuance to it, but I'm saying no. Ooh. unless they get a consistent goal scorer, or Bakrar himself starts being able to find the back of the net.
I like it, because right now they're so reliant on Santi, and then it's, hey, is it going to be Fernandez this game? Is it going to be Agustin Ojeda, who we just brought in but needs to settle? And Mijatovic just hasn't been there because of these green card issues as well. All right,
It was coming out of you.
You needed to give it. I understand.
I did. Because I have called quite a few of their games, and I do like them. I like their structure. I like their personnel. I like their wingers. But for the amount of chances that they're creating to not be able to score more goals, I think MLS, any league in the world, if you don't have an elite goal scorer, I think it is hard to find yourself in postseason play, or at least – high up the rankings to be pushing for some sort of like trophy or, you know, excitement at the end of the season.
In your experience, because I saw the play with Bakrar when I was watching the game this weekend, where it's a squared ball across the box. He's literally in the middle of the 18-yard box, like looking at an open goal, and he shoots it wide, falls on the ground, hand, head in hands.
Yeah.
Have you ever played with a forward who you knew had every quality needed, but just something from a confidence standpoint just wasn't clicking?
Yeah, well, I think every striker goes to that, right? That's the thing, right? Like, and it's just about how quickly you can come out of it, and you know, that's a tough. I think you hit it on the head. Is in his reaction after that. You could just tell, because at first I was like, okay, is this even bothering him? Not that it's not bothering him, like he doesn't want to score goals, but he seems to be consistently putting himself in great positions. He's doing other things that are helping this team. But then that reaction, I was like, oh, okay, this is a guy that, like, this is weighing on him. Every play that he gets inside the 18, he's obviously thinking about that, because that is a easy find the back of the net option, especially in the transitional moment that they had for that. So yeah, I think it's just like, but now we're getting into the 11th game and he still has no goals on the season, right? And like, how much is he feeling that pressure from his teammates? Yep. So all of that stuff would be weighing. But I feel like it's one of those things, you get one goal, then you start to open up, and that team looks completely different if he's scoring.
Absolutely. He's in great spots. Yep. He's in wonderful spots. He just sometimes looks like me when he's there right now. But we know he has the ability.
And me. Yeah. I shouldn't have been up there either.
Can we, I'm going to go direct again. Is this already a lost season for the New England Revolution?
Oh goodness. Yeah. These are tough. My answer is a bit of yes. And going back to what we were saying,
I like that little improv, improv. Yes. And okay.
Thank you. That's what I'm here for. But it's going back to the same thing as NYCFC, right? Until they can find somebody that is consistently finding the back of the net, I think it's going to be a challenge, because a lot of these games are fairly close. I mean, at the beginning of the season, they were leaking unnecessary goals, putting themselves in trouble, right? In risky positions unnecessarily. But I mean, this isn't the team that we've typically seen in the past, where you're getting your outside backs forward, they're serving crosses in, you got numbers around the box, you have Carlos Hill pulling all the strings. I mean, that's a guy that has 3 goals, 1 assist on the season. So obviously it's pretty, you know, bleak in the attack. So unless they can do something in the June window, unless they can get firing on all cylinders. Who's coming back? Barrero, maybe potentially by sooner than later as well. Those would be two big pieces to pick up. But I was a bit shocked that they went for a goalkeeper and defender in the last day of this trade window instead of looking for an attacker. So, but yeah, I mean, listen, this team has proven to win in years past with primarily the same group. So I do feel like there is an opportunity for them to start to turn things around, but you got to start to do it quickly.
I mean, look, we told the story over and over last year with Sporting Kansas City, you know, coming back, making the playoffs after not winning in their first 10 games. We're 10 match days in, and, you know, the Revs are in the same sort of position. They're down at the bottom, and they need something to happen now. Otherwise, it's just going to be too big of a gap. 4 points through 8 games, you've put yourself in a hole.
Yeah, the difference feels to me, though, is like the difference between the Eastern Conference compared to the Western Conference to get yourself out of that situation. Not taking anything away from Sporting KC last year, right? But like,
bring that Philly heat on the Western Conference in here, Lori. Those weaklings in the West.
No.
I'm just kidding. All right, last one for you. I always like asking these questions to broadcasters because you see so many teams and you see them up close and personal. You know, I'm watching a million games on a Saturday night and I'm not in the building. I'm not feeling it viscerally the way that you are. What's the best team, the most impressive team that you've called this year so far?
Yeah, it has been Columbus. I called a game there last year, and it's such a wonderful stadium to be in. And actually, it was such a good game. We had DC United versus Columbus a few weeks ago, and I thought DC United is probably one of their best performances of the season. Defensively, were excellent. Cucho got the red card, but I felt like they did such a good job on him of just frustrating him. But I think there's two aspects I would say about this Columbus team outside of just the pure aesthetic of the way that they play, the fluidity, Wilfred Nancy's team, and understanding each player, understanding different positions and just having elite players in all of those positions as well, is one, the shortened offseason. So not only do you win the MLS Cup, but then you come back and you're playing in Champions Cup, you're playing the regular season, and you're still getting results at a high level. And then in that game in particular, not their best, but they can still get a result at home. And I think that is huge, and it's a huge credit to the buy-in and what they're capable of doing this season as well. But yeah, fun team to watch.
People listening right now may just be listening before, after, whatever, of Columbus Monterrey. And we won't preview that game in depth here because there's no point. You're probably watching it, but Going Direct has worked with you, Lori. Yeah. Are they getting through? Are they going to the final, the Columbus Crew?
Yeah, they are going through.
Let's go. That's what I like to hear. That's the positivity we need on this Thursday. Lori Lindsay, you can, of course, watch her on MLS Season Pass in Philadelphia this weekend with RSL in town, a big game, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. She and Chris Whittingham on that call. Lori, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Pleasure.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that show. Big thanks to Evander and the Portland Timbers for making that interview happen early morning out on the West Coast, as well as Paul Dolan and Lori Lindsay for taking some time out of their busy schedules to chat with us. If you can't tell, Thursdays are still a little bit of a work in progress. We're figuring out where we're going to go on this particular day of the week. Monday, easy money. Doyle and I going through the MLS weekend, getting all our thoughts out there before moving on to the next match day. But Thursdays are still a little bit of a mystery. So if you have ideas or suggestions, you know how to get at me. My DMs are always open on Twitter. Happy to have you at me as well. And the email is extratime@mlssoccer.com. With that, enjoy match day 11, folks. Should be a good one. We'll see you on Monday. Adios.